Welcome, listeners, to the third season of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. I'm Alexia Gordon, author and your podcast host. Tune in and join me as I chat with authors writing cozy and traditional mysteries. You won't find explicit violence, sex, or gore. You will find intricate plots, engaging characters, and brilliant writing. Thanks for listening. Hello, listeners. Welcome to another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. I'm Alexia Gordon, author and host of the podcast. Today, Jen Collins-Bohr joins me in the corner to chat about Murder in the Piazza, a Maggie White mystery. Welcome, Jen.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Now, Murder in the Piazza is your first novel, so congratulations.
Thank you.
And how does it feel to have this book out in the world?
Oh my goodness, I'm so excited about it. I started writing this book about 5 years ago, and I thought, oh, I'll just take a year and write a book and then, you know, move on with my life. And 5 years later, it's been a much longer project than that, but I found out how much fun writing was. So I was working on it and making all the revisions and revisions and revisions and sharing it with lots of people. And it finally got to a point where I said, oh my goodness, this is a real book. So it's really exciting to have it out there.
Well, again, congratulations. Now, will you tell us about Maggie White and what she's up to?
Absolutely. So Maggie is a middle-aged American who finds herself living in Rome. She is a successful career woman. Her children are grown, and she got laid off from her corporate job. And at the same time, her husband got an opportunity to go to Rome. And she thought, well, this is fabulous. I will just live the sweet life. I will be a woman of leisure. My husband will work. Everyone says Rome is a wonderful city. What could be better? But as a woman who spent her whole life having things to do, she finds herself really bored, having trouble just sort of following in her husband's shadow. And so she insists on taking a job with a company leading painting tours of Rome. She thinks this isn't like her old corporate job, but it'll be something to keep her busy. And everyone thinks there's something a little bit shady about her boss, but she takes it anyway. And about 2 days into the job, realizes it's a terrible mistake and starts fantasizing about ways to bump him off. And then, sure, lo and behold, someone else does it for her.
Now, as you mentioned, Maggie is over 50. She's proud of her successful business career, which she was unfairly forced out of. She is married. She has grown children. So that makes her different from a lot of the sleuths you see in cozy mysteries. So how does Maggie's experience and confidence in her abilities affect the way she approaches sleuthing?
Absolutely. I really wanted someone sort of at the other end of the spectrum. You know, there's so many bright young things out there. And as a reader, I really wanted to have a woman who I could identify with. Maggie's a little bit older than I am. My children are younger. They're 5 and 10. So that idea of having them out of the house is more of a distant idea, what if exercise for me as a writer. But I wanted someone who really has her stuff together. And I think with an amateur sleuth, you know, you always are trying to find out the right way so that she's solving a crime in a way that makes sense, that it's not that sort of the police are buffoons or overlooking obvious clues, but here's a woman with her own special skill set that she's bringing. And so for me, Maggie is someone who at home is very successful. She's a woman who takes charge, that when her kids were young and the PTA needed someone to get something happen, she would just step in and stand up to the principal who didn't want to have those school uniforms ordered or whatever the project was. And it worked. She was a woman who spoke her mind, the youngest woman ever to get the title of vice president at her company. But then she moves to Rome, and she's in a country where she is just a complete fish out of water. And as a reader, I love fish out of water stories, because you see someone who's got the skill set in a place where they aren't sure how that skill set applies. And so when Maggie's trying to organize all the expats, get them to do something, and they're saying, just take it easy, she finds herself really in a conflict. And so solving the mystery is a way for her to put that can-do, can't-sit-by-the-sidelines woman who speaks up, put all of those strengths to work and really help her find her place in this new land.
And how does being that fish out of water sort of inform the action of the story? Because that is an important part. I mean, this isn't a place where she's used to being. It's not the boardroom where she's used to being in control. So how did you use that to sort of drive the action?
I used it so that she could really have fresh eyes and really be somebody who's sort of not taking things for granted. I think, you know, so many of us, we go through our daily lives and we don't really think about all the people around us, all the relationships that exist. And so I think when you've got somebody, a fish out of water, and Maggie in particular, you know, she's this new person in this world where she can look at the actions of the people and say, well, why are they doing these things? What if, what could be going on? Because she's so trying to figure out how to navigate her life there on every level and trying to understand all the dynamics, that piece naturally plays out for the detection.
And you also mentioned that Maggie is an expat. Well, she and her husband are. And for those of us who are not familiar with expats or expatriates, can you tell us a little bit about them?
Absolutely. So she is someone who gets the opportunity that so many of us would dream of, right? To live in a foreign country and have your company pay for your apartment, and they take care of all the paperwork and the visas and all of those things. So her husband has a job, a busy job to be going to every day. And she's there as an American, but knowing that she's going to be in Italy for 2 years. And as so often happens in these places, the expats tend to cluster together. Because as much as you want to move to Italy and, you know, get to know all the Italians and really be integrated, a common theme is that people all know that these people are there for a short term. They're Americans who always, you know, English is their first language. Some of them have learned Italian well. Others, like Maggie, don't speak it at all. You know, it's sort of natural that they cluster together. And that was something that for Maggie was a bit of a surprise. And we all think it'd be great to move to another country. I'm going to, you know, be invited to Christmas at my next door neighbor's house. But all of us, it's hard moving to new places. It takes time to get acclimated and for people to welcome you into their social set. And if you don't speak the language very well, that's a heck of a lot harder. So it's natural that you're clustering with the others. And so the expat set, or this group of sort of Americans and Brits, have created a community in Italy. And Rome in particular is a place where there are lots of expats who come through for jobs, you know, whether they're academics and things like that. I've made Maggie's husband a corporate person who we never in the early books, this book and the other one I'm working on, his job is a little bit unclear, and it doesn't really matter what it is, that Maggie just sort of lets his world wash over her. You know, we all have partners, so we don't need to know all the details of their work. It's just sort of the social side that's important. But creating that community is something that, you know, I consider this book on the border between cozy and traditional mystery, but that sense of community, I think, in mysteries is really appealing to me, this world where people are friends or neighbors or have these dynamics. And so having this expat community that Maggie was navigating in created that community that in other books, maybe it's the small village or the small town, or, you know, that brings people together.
Now, you, speaking of the small town feeling of community that you get from a lot of cozies, you centered this around a tour group. And tours attract people from all over, meaning that you had to create a varied cast of characters who didn't share that common small town background. So what were some of the challenges of writing characters who were so different from each other, where you couldn't, you know, allude to the corner coffee shop and everybody would automatically know what people were talking about?
Well, and I actually sort of liked that idea. For me, it made it more interesting to write that they didn't all know each other, because while it's not the same as those classic country house mysteries where people are sort of drawn together, it gave me a way to bring different personalities together and have them interact with each other in very close quarters. And so for me, it was really fun to have this young couple. There's a young couple who it's clear seem a little bit out of sync with these older people on the tour, because that's who tends to go on painting tours, and their dynamics and how some people are, you know, chatty with each other and other people just want to learn what's being taught on the tour. And some people are clearly there just to relax. Other people want to refine their painting skills because the tour is about improving your painting. So for me, it was a nice and sort of unexpected tool to be able to bring those people together. And I love writing those quirky characters who, you know, you're not sure early on, is this person a suspect or are they just a tour guest? Or who are these people and how important are they going to be in the story?
So what inspired you to choose Rome as your setting? Was it because there's the expat community there, or was it, or you just love Rome? Or
it was more the latter. It was really about where did I want to spend my time in my head when I was writing this book? Because even though I was naive about how long it would take to write the book, I knew it would take a long time. And so I wanted, when I sat down at the desk, to be in a place that was just so transporting and where, you know, I'd finish a writing session and be like, oh, that was wonderful. And, you know, setting and scene is something that I really enjoy writing. And Rome was just so rich in being able to describe, you know, winding cobblestone lanes and the food and the smells as Maggie's walking down the street, that was something that I really wanted to dive into. And it's a city that I love visiting as a tourist, and I've made a lot of trips there. But it was one that was, by making Maggie an expat, I could sort of bring that newcomer's eyes to the city. As I don't think I could have successfully written a book about someone who's lived there for 20 years because I don't have that experience with the city, but I know it as a visitor. And as an armchair reader, I really love the idea of experiencing another city or another place through the stories that I read. And so when I was thinking about how I wanted the story to come together, that armchair travel experience was important to me. And so as I thought about what cities I was going to work on, Rome was just a natural. And I've always loved archaeology. That's something that's always been a side passion of mine. And so the Roman antiquity side of it was something that was just fun to be able to work in little tidbits of. And so it's a city that I adore and was fun bringing to the page.
Well, now, being in Rome, Maggie has to deal with Italian law enforcement and the Italian legal system, which are certainly different from the American systems. So how did you research Italian law enforcement so that you could create a realistic portrayal without making the officers seem like buffoons, you know, as you specifically set out not to do?
Right. It's exactly the challenge. And I think the way I wanted to get around it was to have Maggie not very involved in the investigation from the police side. That she's involved originally, she's the one who finds her dead boss. You know, her wish has come true, right? Never, it's always dangerous when we get what we ask for. And she is immediately a little bit excited about the fact, my goodness, I'm going to be the prime suspect. How, you know, what a thrill, right? We've all read all these books and she's prepared to face off against the investigator and she's ready for all the tough questions. And he asks her name and address and kind of sends her on her way. And at that, she feels quite dismissed. How dare you not consider me a suspect? And so that really pulls her in. And she does what she would do at home, which is to be helpful. And so she puts together a timeline of events and shares that with the investigator. And all of this ends up just, you know, elevating her in their eyes, making her seem like more of a suspect than she would have in the first place. But in terms of sort of the police investigation and the research for it, what I wanted to do was to have it clear when she has some interactions with them further in the book, that they've actually been doing their job and that they have been researching Maggie and they have been finding out things about the other guests and the other people in the world. And so she's not seeing their procedure. And so as a writer, that made it easier for me because a lot of that was happening off the page. And so I didn't have to get into those things. I was able to research titles and things like that and, you know, how precincts would work and those pieces, but I didn't have to get into all the nuts and bolts of the investigation because it just comes out in later things of course we knew that. We did make these calls. We did do these things.
Which is actually a realistic twist because real life police generally don't share everything they know with the general public. So I'm sure law enforcement who reads this will appreciate that. As we've already talked about, Murder in the Piazza centers around a tour group. This one is a painting tour group. Well, first question, do you paint or is that something you're interested in?
I don't. I am so unartistic. And so that was sort of another thing to be researching for this and to be looking at is sort of, what do they teach in painting classes? What do people talk about? And So I did a lot of work on that front of it. And, you know, I remember in one of my early classes, somebody was talking about a workshop. People were, you know, providing feedback on early pages. And someone was saying, watercolors? Rome is all about oil. And I said, gee, I hadn't really thought about that. But then when I did more research on painting tours, I found out, no, they mostly do watercolor. So I was on safe ground there, even if much of the art of Rome is about oil. So there I was definitely coming to it with a newbie's perspective, which is much like Maggie, that she's hired to work for this painting company, but she's really the operations person behind it, you know, in a fairly low level, but really not giving the painting instruction at all. And so part of, I don't know, the humor of the book for me is that the painting instructor, Thomas, he's been hired to run these painting tours, but he is not a traditional instructor. He's, you know, focused on Polynesian art and things like that. So he's really encouraging people to free themselves and not be tied to all the rules of painting. So it was fun to be able to play with that and sort of the idea of, you know, the different types of people who you're going to encounter both down on the instruction side and here. And, you know, I've certainly taken classes and other things with quirky instructors who say, that's not exactly the way I thought I was going to learn this, but it worked out well. So.
Anyway, other question is that have you been on some tours that were so bad where you thought about bumping off a few of your fellow tour members or the tour guides?
I'm glad that you asked that because I am such a not tour person. I'm sort of that person who insists on making their life harder by walking around with the guidebook, you know, the head buried in the book. Okay, it says to turn right here, we turn right, and we're seeing the crowds of people off in the distance who are having some lovely person tell them about what they're seeing. And I'm the one who's carrying my Rick Steves book. So I'm in the anti-tour group thing. So I had to make sure it was never being too tough on tours. Because, you know, there's always that stereotype, right, about like 10 wonderful, you know, foreign cities and 8 fun-filled nights or something like that, where people are just racing through. Fortunately, Maggie's tour is the type of tour that if I were to take a tour of Rome, I would take, where they go slowly, they see a site in the morning, they get some instruction, and then they use what they've learned and paint. So they see some of those tour groups where, in my mind, as a visitor who passes them, they just sort of seem like, you know, just one faceless person after another, which I use a little bit in the story. But for me, it's part of the background of the city of Rome too, though, is that the tourists are so present there. You know, it's sort of like Venice in that way, that the city, at least, you know, when times are normal and people are able to travel, the visitors create a real part of the city, which I think is different from the places where, certainly where I live in Chicago, you know, you see the tourists and, you know, if you're on Michigan Avenue or something like that, you know, you're just like, oh gosh, they're walking so slowly with carrying their bags. Can't they move along a little faster? But in Rome, like that's such a big part of the experience, both as a visitor and someone who lives there longer. So I wanted to have a little bit of fun with the idea of the tourists who are just sort of everywhere.
I have actually done a mix of traveling on my own and traveling with tours, and I promise you there's always at least one person on every tour that so yeah, you did well in the book. There's always that one person in every group that you're like, well, you know, if I pushed him in front of the bus, would anybody notice? So
well, it's definitely something I've been playing with because this is the first book in the series and I'm struggling with the second book and, you know, thinking ahead to the future books. And, you know, part of it is like, can't always bump off someone on the tour. We're gonna no one's gonna sign up for this thing. Damn the work. So part of that is those personalities and how they're gonna play out. But it's good to know that there would always be someone who should be bumped off. So
you know, nobody's gonna want to go on a tour with me.
No, though, you're not the one. You're clearly the fact you know it's someone else. That means it's not you. They can sit next to you on a bus without a problem.
And touring, of course, is something that really none of us are doing right now. But even in the before times, not everyone can travel to Rome or Paris or Scotland. And as you mentioned, you know, armchair travel is an excellent way to visit someplace vicariously if you can't visit in person. So how did you bring Rome to life for readers who aren't able to visit the city themselves?
that for me was one of like the biggest pleasures of writing the book. I mean, of course, there's so many pleasures, right? I love the puzzle, I love the personalities, but I also loved the opportunity to describe things through Maggie's eyes and through the tour. And so I was very intentional about including some of the sites of Rome that people are going to experience when they go there, or that, you know, visitors, the must-see places, and to have them with some facts about it. So you might have, in a couple of places, we've got them touring a museum where the tour guide is bringing to life a few of the sculptures, or we're talking about the mosaic. So there is some of that information sprinkled in, hopefully lightly with a light hand, but just some of those facts, but really to think about what it feels like, what it smells like, just to try to capture a few of the experiences there. And, you know, sort of going to Trevi Fountain, which, you know, I think everybody's seen pictures of, and then to talk about it from Maggie's perspective of, well, it's kind of crowded, and, you know, they found a seat here where a conversation is taking place, and it provided really nice backdrops for things, because, you know, as she's conducting these interviews or having these discussions with people, to have you know, these great works of art in the background as a writer was just so much fun to be able to do, you know, as opposed to sort of writing something where two people are talking on a park bench, you know, and a pigeon walks by. Here it could be two people walking on a park bench where a pigeon walks by, but in the background is this, you know, Bernini sculpture, and, you know, it was done in this year, and you can have this Greek or Roman god, you know, wrought to life three times higher, larger than life size behind them. It just created these opportunities, I think, to make things just a little bit more fun to write about, but as a reader to bring the setting to life. And I also really wanted to focus on the food, because that's something for me as a traveler, I will admit, I generally go to a couple museums, but my passion is really just sort of being in a city and enjoying it. And so often, like the walking tour that I'll do with my guidebook in hand, or the museum that we'll go to, is more an excuse just to get out into the city. Because sometimes it's hard without a destination in mind to just freely wander. And so for me, Rome is about the food that you are enjoying yourself, or, you know, the food experiences that you're passing by, the people who are sitting at a cafe and you can get a, you know, a whiff of their pastries on the table in front of them, or, you know, you're walking by a bakery or the pizzeria, or going to a farmer's market, or, you know, just the market, not farmer's market, and all the different things. And you might buy a little bit of cheese or a few olives. And so though that experience of Rome is what I wanted to bring to life in the book, because it's something that as a reader, you know, I get so much pleasure before going on a trip about reading about a place. I get so much pleasure after a trip reading about a place, instead of, oh, I've been there. Oh, I didn't think about it that way. Or, oh, that's so right. You know, because of course we all travel differently and our experiences are so different of what we remember. But then also there are places I have no intention of going, and I love getting to learn about them through books. I mean, we're all readers here, and so we all love reading, but that ability to be transported and to be somewhere else is just a joy for me. And it's often a really important part about why I choose a book. It's like, yes, I would like to spend however many hours of my life in that place with these characters.
And what is some place that you travel by armchair other than Rome?
Oh my goodness. There's so many of them. I think, you know, the current ones, Ireland through Tana French is a place that I think she does a really nice job of, I mean, nice, beautiful, wonderful job of bringing to life. And particularly you get that time travel aspect too for her books that are set a little bit further past, and you get that piece of it. I mean, I'm a huge Anglophile, so anything written in any stretch of the United Kingdom, I've got those pieces of. All those books set in Africa are always so wonderful to read and get that experience. I mean, I think there's so many that I just, for me, I can't think that there's a place I've ever been where I didn't read about it first. And of course it's different when you're there, but it's just, it's nice to experience it through someone else's eyes. And I'm an avid guidebook reader too. So before going on a trip, I might read 8 different guidebooks and, you know, have all those different perspectives in my head. So I just, I like that sort of type of research, but it's not officially research.
Oh, what's your favorite guidebook? I know you mentioned Rick Steves.
Oh, I'm a huge Rick Steves addict. I could read, like, I have a whole bookshelf devoted to his, for maybe we've only been to half of those places, but I still have the guidebooks that I bought thinking maybe we'd go there. I love his personality, and I like his sort of sense of the world. And he's written a nonfiction book just about what travel does and how it can help, you know, with your worldview. And I read that, and I find him to be a really interesting guy.
So in between your armchair travels, what are you working on next? And you mentioned you're working on the next book in this series.
Yes, I am. And I was so naive. I mean, you've written so many books, so maybe you can give me some advice here. But I thought, gee, well, the first book took about 5 years. But, you know, I've learned so much about craft. I've learned, you know, that you're supposed to outline. I've learned, you know, how you have to have the clues in you. I sort of thought, okay, I've learned how to do this. This next book will be no problem because I know what it's about. I know where it's set. I've got my detective, Maggie. You know, I already have all this information. And it just seems like all the things I've learned, it's like it's made it that much harder, because then as I'm writing, I'm like, oh, is this an inciting incident? Oh, is this dramatic enough? It's made it more, almost more challenging. I'm trying to turn off that part of my brain that learned things. So it's that balance of two steps forward, one step backward. I don't know if you've had that experience.
The only advice I can give you is like that the third book is easier than the second one. The second one's actually the worst one to write. So.
Oh, you make me feel so much better. Oh, you've made my day.
Every iota of self-doubt you didn't even know you owned will come into play in the second book, but it gets easier after that. So,
oh, that makes me. And did you just push through, or what did you figure out was your trick for the second book?
Just slog through it and try not to hate myself too much. You know, I get somebody to say something nice about me to remind me that I wasn't the world's biggest failure, that kind of thing.
You make me feel so much better. All right. That's great to hear. Not that you went through that, of course, but that it is perhaps a common experience.
But, and so that readers can enjoy the experience of traveling to Rome and learning something about watercolors as well as Italian masters and maybe a hint of murder in there somewhere, where can they buy a copy of Murder in the Piazza?
Absolutely. So it's available through IndieBound if you want to connect with your local bookstore, as well as Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all those places.
And where can readers connect with you?
Absolutely. So on my website, I've got an email list to sign up for, and then I'm sporadically active on Instagram, which is a new thing for me, which is at Jen Collins Moore, and then Facebook. And the links to those are on my website as well, which is jennifercollinsmoore.com.
Okay. And it's Jennifer, J-E-N-N-I-F-E-R?
Yes.
Well, thank you very much, Jen, for joining me in the corner today.
This has been so much fun. Thank you for the conversation, and thank you for the boost for the second book. That makes me feel so much better. It'll be easy sailing after I get one of the...
Well, you're so welcome, and I'm you know, looking forward to Maggie's next adventures in book two and many, many books beyond that.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. My guest today was Jen Collins Moore, author of the debut mystery Murder in the Piazza. I'm Alexia Gordon, your host. Until next time, goodbye.
Thanks, listeners, for joining me for another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating or review wherever you listened. Follow the podcast on social media. I'm on Facebook as The Cozy Corner Podcast and Twitter and Instagram as podcast_cozy. Now you can support me on Patreon. Become a patron for as little as $3 a month and get a shout out on an episode of The Cozy Corner. Support at higher levels gains access to patron-only posts, thank you gifts, and giveaways. Sign up at www.patreon.com/authoralexiagordon. Thank you for your support, and thanks for listening. Until next time, goodbye.